Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, episode 151, with me, Robin, is Martin.
Hey, hello. Good evening, Robin.
Oh, good evening.
Good afternoon, morning, or evening, or night, I guess, to the lovely listeners at home. How are you doing?
Whatever time of day. I'm all right. I'm looking forward to discussing today's topic, which makes me ask the question, Martin, are you happy?
I think so.
You're not sure.
I think as we'll find out. I am. I've got lots to be happy for. I think as we'll find out, you know, different methodologies are used to survey happiness, to tell us what happiness is, and it's quite a difficult term to define, isn't it? Happiness.
So, maybe is.
What's that? But yeah, what about you?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm all right. Wondering where Alex is though today, when we're discussing the unhappiest places in the world to live. Where is he?
Well, he's incredibly happy because he has been selected, despite having no Scottish ancestry, he's been selected for the Scottish national hopscotch team, who are currently competing in Tahiti.
Tahiti. So,
good luck to Alex and all of his fellow hop scotchers. In fact, hopscotch, you know, by the name, was of course invented.
Of course, yes.
In Scotland, of course.
Famously Scottish game, yeah.
Famously Scottish, based on, you know, the hot hop, but also hot scotch that was consumed by the competitors as they jumped.
That's an awful thought.
Leapt.
Hot scotch whiskey. Yeah. Awful.
Anyway, that's enough history of hopscotch. Good luck to Alex and the team in Tahiti with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going for gold.
So. We have heard it's a ruthless sport, so if Alex comes back with both legs missing, we'll know why.
Exactly. Yep, no love for teammates in hopscotch.
So, if you haven't gathered already, we shall be discussing surprisingly unhappy places to live, based on a recent study that's been published just this month, actually, in the year 2024. And we'll be combining with some other studies, and both on a global scale and on a more individual scale, if this makes sense, studies that attempt to measure happiness and the happiest and unhappiest places in the world. And we'll see if there's some agreement between them, and then maybe we'll offer our own opinions on what makes happiness and unhappiness a thing for people. I may be promising too much, though, because before then, we will define happiness. Before the day is over, before this podcast finishes, you shall understand what happiness truly is. That's the promise we make to you today. No false advertising.
Like it sounds like we're definitely at only $3.99 a month. It sounds like that's $399. It sounds like we're inducing people into some kind of cult.
We are totally not hawking any supplements of any kind. Although today's podcast is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon support. YouTube members, fantastic people who help keep this podcast going. And before we respond to the comments that you lovely people make on our videos and podcast episodes and your reviews, please do leave a review on any podcast platform of your choice. It's great to have feedback. Always nice to know what you think and what you're doing when you listen to us. I would like to thank, in particular, Amy Licious, Cindy Hafner, James, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapier, Ahmad, Peasward, Josh Tromatek, A Filthy Casual, and Simon Workman. You wonderful people are the stars of our Patreon and YouTube supporters. You are so fantastic. But thank you to everybody who supports us, and thank you to everyone who listens to us. And as a reward for you lovely people who listen to us, Martin, do you have a riddle?
I don't even know if this is a reward, Robin, but yeah, I do have one.
It constitutes a reward. I think it counts.
Okay, right. So you can get this in the comments. Right. And you, Robin, of course, you know, by the end of the episode.
But, my track record is pretty bad with this. So.
Oh, this one. Okay, this one is, there's no trick question here. It's just straight up a classic standard riddle that we may or may not have done before. Okay, in the background, the dog's chasing the cat out of the room. That's fine.
Okay. I just assumed there was fun going on below the desk. That's all.
Oh, goodness me. Footsie, or pawsies, as we say. Okay, riddle. The more you take, the more you leave behind. What am I?
Okay, I might have an idea. Mm. Embarrassingly, I went through several options before I settled on one that makes sense. But, yeah, I think I might have it.
The ones that didn't make sense, that's always fun. What did your brain go to first?
Breath.
I'll leave it behind. Well, I guess, yeah. breath in the wind on a cold night.
Yeah, I don't think that really counts.
No, it doesn't quite work, does it?
In the meantime, before you reveal that answer at the end of the episode, mm-hmm. we'd like to know what you think, what you folks have said on previous episodes of the podcast. Martin, are there any comments that you'd like to highlight and respond to?
Well, I've got one from Cat Walker.
Oh, yeah.
And they say, it's about our prisons episode. So we did an episode on what is the perfect prison. And Cat Walker made an interesting point, saying prisons in the United States were once for rehabilitation. Then the government realized that it could be used to punish those who it decided were undesirable. And then corporations found out that they could actually make money from prisons and use lobbyists to get prisons privatized. Yep, speaking truth here. Mm. Now prisons in the United States aren't so much for rehabilitation or for punishment, but for the enrichment of corporations. Ultimately, it's about money now, not the people.
I mean,
it's very difficult to not agree with that.
Yeah.
When, as soon as it becomes a private entity where people can profit from it, there's always going to be a vested interest in having people in prison to make money. And so, I thought, it's reaffirming, I think, a few of the points that we said within the episode. So thanks for that, Kat. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Like I say, really hard to disagree, to take any kind of issue with that position. Although I will confess, I got a bit distracted by the repeated use of the word corporations, which reminded me of Team America, is it? You know, where the bit where, is it Michael Moore, the puppet Michael Moore? It's like, and the corporations are evil and the corporations take over. And then the corporations are all corporation-y and then the corporations, it just goes on like that. It's been a while since I saw that.
I know, it's so good. It's so good. If this happens, it will be 9/11 times. Yes, 91,100.
Such a good one. Sorry, Kat, I didn't mean to undermine the value of what you just contributed. I just got distracted. By the word corporations. I've got a comment on the episode after that, which was about the most successful spies in history. Mm. Which is, I really enjoyed that one. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was good.
To hear about the spies that we each chose. The one that I chose was a spy in the Tudor period. And Ace Ashford 6362 asks, as part of this, in response to the story that I was telling, weren't Mary and Elizabeth cousins? This being Mary, Queen of Scots, and Elizabeth I of England. And yes, they were, is the answer. Indeed. So, yeah, easy.
There we go.
Easy question answered. It's nice occasionally to have a direct comment question that I'm like, yeah, we can answer that.
Yeah. I mean, you only have to wait approximately a week after asking it to get an answer.
Yeah, and probably make the effort to listen to another episode.
Fair play. Yeah. Fair play. Appreciate it. And thank you so much for the comment. Ace Ashford, that's a cool...
That's quite a good name, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
And in general, there's another question, comment that I would like to respond to. But this was on the prisons episode again. So back to that episode beforehand. And it was from Microtech 5871, who says, Robin is a paid spokesperson for Norwegian prisons. And I admit there were parts of that podcast where I did lean a little bit hard on the whole, Norway's great for prisons.
I think sometimes when we're on this, you're like... You go down a certain, not you personally, we all do. We go down a certain path of discourse, discussion, right? And then it's hard to back out of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I find that's the case anyway. So you end up making the point a few times and reiterating that. But I think you're probably right, though. Like, there are some things they're doing right. You only have to look at the statistics of reoffending rates to see that something's going well there for the system they've got in place.
Oh, exactly.
And I think maybe it's not necessarily about the prisons themselves, but about the structures in society set up for when people are out of prison, you know, for rehabilitation and reintegration into society.
It's a really good point. They're doing something right. I mean, well, speaking of Norway, Norway is regularly rated one of the happiest places in the world to live. So shall we talk about the unhappiest places in the world to live?
Oh, yes. Yes, let's.
The unhappiest places in the world to live. Surprising, some of them, actually. And prompted by a recent publication, a recent study that was made public just this month in the year of our Lord 2024. Our Lord obviously being the great spaghetti monster in the sky, for those of you who wonder which religion we subscribe to. So what does this study say? Where's it come from? And where are the unhappiest places in the world to live?
Yes. So the study itself is from the Global Mind Project's Mental State of the World report, based on surveys from over 400,000 people in 71 countries. So it's not the whole world, but it's a good portion of the major countries. Mm. And really what it's saying is that since 2020 in particular, and I think we can, you know, pin some of that, of course, on the pandemic, there's been actually a decline in people's mental health, which is leading people to be less happy than ever before, really, in terms of, you know, since these studies have been done. Mm. And there's this real divide between certain areas of the world, in particular South American countries, which are near the top of this study into people's mental health and how they're feeling, with Dominican Republic, I think, being the highest in the world in terms of mental health happiness.
Really?
Yes, yeah. Dominican Republic, Sri Lanka being second, which is quite surprising ways. Malaysia, some African countries as well. So Nigeria makes the list in sixth place in terms of happiness. And then at the bottom, or countries that are definitely, or people within countries that are getting increasingly unhappy, is Uzbekistan at the top of the list. And then a variety of other European countries, including the UK, which according to this study is the second unhappiest place in the world, which is...
Wow.
Whoa. And you compare this to other studies as well. We'll probably go into it a little bit more, but like the World Happiness Happiness Report, where the UK is like 20th out of every country in the world. So there's a huge disparity between what's being used in this particular study to measure happiness and what's being used in the World Happiness Report. But yeah, Uzbekistan being first, the UK second. Other highlights or lowlights from this list include South Africa in third, Australia in sixth. And, you know,
it's, oh, again,
most of the time people go, Australia, oh yeah, a beacon of freedom and, you know, democracy and a lot of indicators that are usually linked to happiness in countries. Mm. Also, Ireland's on the list, the top 10 list at least, in eighth. So, yeah, European countries.
So Ireland, Australia, South Africa and the UK are all... in the bottom 10, the 10 unhappiest places to live there in.
Yeah.
There. Wow. Okay.
I know. Shocked, I tell you.
I mean, I feel sorry for Uzbekistan, but the little I know about it, I'm not surprised it's low on the list, you know, maybe not the worst, but still.
We've mentioned Uzbekistan before on this podcast.
We have indeed.
So, yes. There we go. So.
Did you mention Brazil as well?
Brazil's in fourth position, the fourth least happiest country. And some of these you look at and you go, yeah, like Uzbekistan, it's high for like political corruption, right?
Yeah,
it's one of the main things that we looked into previously.
And a bit of starvation as a result of food supplies not being secured and things like that.
Yeah, you think like, yeah, food stability has got to be a massive one in terms of how happy people are.
Yeah.
And then you look at others like... South Africa, you could probably pin some of that if you wanted to on major wealth inequality. You could say, South Africa has, you know, massive wealth inequality. There's in the major cities, there's quite high crime rates. Similarly, in Brazil, massive wealth disparities between people in favelas and then people living the high life. But then and Iraq, you know, of course, has been in war. Yeah. Yemen's on the list, you know, way below the UK. And you're like, yeah, well, there's famine in Yemen, right? I'm not laughing at that, but like it's just it seems ridiculous, right? To say, oh, people actually in Yemen are happier than
Australia. The UK.
But yes, but you can imagine the reasons why. Whereas you look at, you know, the UK in particular, Australia and Ireland, and you're like, well, is there that much to be unhappy about? But what's the reason for this, Robin? Like, why are these countries coming up as some of the unhappiness according to this report?
Well, I think To unravel that, maybe we should compare it to the World Happiness Index. So, as you said already, the UK is 20th happiest country in the world, according to the World Happiness Report. The 2024 report actually covers data gathered over the last 2 years, I think. So, from 2022 to 2023 inclusive, that's the data range it's based on. And let's assume nothing dramatic happened between December 2023 and March 2024 that made the UK go from the 20th happiest to the second least happy in the world. But the Dominican Republic, by contrast, was 69 on the the list, nice, of happiest places in the world. So yeah, 69 out of 143 is the Dominican Republic, and yet it's the happiest place in the world according to this mental health study, which is really interesting. The first thing that comes to mind when looking at the list of happiest places according to this mental health study is they're all kind of equatorial, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Like they're all pretty warm, pretty nice. You got Dominican Republic, Sri Lanka, Tanzania, Panama, Venezuela, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Uruguay. They're all getting pretty close to the tropics. They're certainly within that band, aren't they? Nigeria, I don't know if I mentioned that one. I wonder if, has that got anything to do with it? Maybe they're just nice to live on the equator, where it's the hottest, driest heat in the world. You don't have miserable humidity.
well, yeah. I mean, you're talking about days of sunlight and, you know, that's a big thing, isn't it? People are seasonally affected.
But interestingly, Psychology Today says that studies have shown that weather doesn't have an impact on happiness. And in fact, the happiest places tend to be closest to the North and South poles. Mm-hmm. So the coldest countries in the world tend to be the happiest. Obviously, that doesn't match this mental health study. But what's interesting is the Psychology Today says it's not proximity to coldness in terms of the North and South poles that makes people happy. It's the fact that those latitudes, ecologically speaking, represent diverse ecological and social variables. They list off thermal demand and comfort, levels of rainfall, pathogen prevalence, as well as national wealth. So basically, affluent countries, that fits, in places in the world where there's not too much rain, but there's enough rain to have a varied climate so that you can go to the woods, go to the beach, go to the mountains. There's no extremes of any particular kind. And being close to the North and South poles, but obviously not too close, you know, in the Arctic Circle is pretty bad. Siberia, I don't think anyone's happy in Siberia, does play a factor. And these are from studies that have been based on life satisfaction in more than 100 countries, so pretty representative of the whole world.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me is around definitions of mental health, and is it ingrained in this culture, in these certain cultures, to be more aware of mental health problems, and therefore there's less stigma around them, so you can say that you're, you know, less happy and that you're affected by mental health issues, and you can say that to someone doing a study because it's very much ingrained within the culture to talk about this and be open about it. Whereas potentially in some other countries, it's like, what do you mean mental health? Whereas actually people could be suffering, but actually they don't define it as a mental health problem. They define it as something else. So maybe the data within the study hasn't necessarily picked up all the nuances that are involved in what is a very complex issue.
Yeah. And in fact, this study comes from the Economic Times, right?
Yeah, that's where it's been reported, yeah.
Well, the Economic Times have a unit called the Economist Intelligence Unit, who do an annual ranking of happiness in countries, and their methodology or their conclusions are summarized as the happiest places tend to be medium-sized cities in affluent democratic countries which have high-quality public healthcare and education systems, good housing and good public transport infrastructure, supported by low levels of corruption and crime. Mm-hmm. So that matches what you were saying about what you'd imagine the happiest places to be, and matches as well with the World Happiness Report's conclusions of the happiest countries, which are all kind of old standards, you know.
What you'd expect.
Right? Yeah, pretty much. Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Israel, Netherlands, Norway, Luxembourg, Switzerland, and Australia are the top 10. And then
I think a lot of those you could reel off, couldn't you, if someone told you what are the
Yeah, they're probably some of the places that would spring to mind the first. And they match pretty much with that summary from the Economist Intelligence Unit in terms of their methodology and how they rate things. But there's another study that the European Commission report, they published it last year in 2023. And there's 27 countries in the EU. It's an economic alliance. But this study was the entirety of the European continent. So it wasn't just those 27 countries. It was the whole of the European continent. So it's upwards of three dozen countries, isn't it? And they were ranking the happiest places in terms of cities, the happiest cities to live in. And they found the happiest cities were Zurich in Switzerland, Copenhagen, Groningen, Gdansk, Leipzig, Stockholm, Geneva, Rostock. Mm-hmm. And the unhappiest cities, and this is where I think it might be interesting, I'd like to know your thoughts. The unhappiest cities in Europe were Palermo in Italy, Athens in Greece, Istanbul in Turkey, Naples in Italy, Belgrade in Serbia, Rome again in Italy, Skopje in Macedonia, and Podgorica in Montenegro. Apologies if I've mispronounced any of those. Those were the least happy cities in Europe, according to this study. And the common denominator that I could figure out is that the happiest 10 in Europe fit with that economist measure of medium-sized cities in affluent countries with good democracy. Mm-hmm. But the unhappy ones are massive tourist towns.
A lot of those are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely, that's got to be part of it. I know that Italy as well has quite high levels, and Greece historically as well, they've quite high levels of unemployment as well.
Yeah.
And like salary versus cost of living is some of the worst in a lot of those big Italian cities as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's a massive one. But without necessarily getting the support from the state that some of those other cities do, right?
Yeah.
Also, I think, I might be wrong here, but I know that when you're looking at Switzerland, like the tax burden is a lot less for people within those countries. So was it based on residents who are living within those cities?
It was,
as opposed to people working, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So was it, so Rome, Athens,
Palermo,
Naples,
Istanbul, yeah.
I mean, a lot of these, I mean, Istanbul has had its fair share of issues over recent years, hasn't it?
Yeah,
instability in terms of the political situation, and as a result, the currency fluctuations have been massive in Turkey, but not just in Istanbul, but in Turkey. But a huge city with incredibly diverse population as well, you know, covering the two continents. That's interesting that it's like one of the unhappiest thing.
Yeah. So I wondered if, based on those factors, maybe it's stability is a big factor here that no one's mentioned yet. I mean, I know things can be tough in, say, El Salvador, which got the really good ranking.
Yeah.
It was eighth, in the Mental State of the World report. But a lot of those countries are actually relatively stable, thinking about these tourist cities where there's constant influxes of large amounts of people who are only there temporarily. I wonder if that has a factor. If a lot of these countries, like Sri Lanka, I know quite a few people who've been to Sri Lanka and they all love it, but it's a fairly stable, even though it has a lot of tourism, it's not like a major tourist destination compared to those other cities I just listed. So I wonder if Sri Lanka is happier because people live a slightly more stable life there. So we might look at them and think, oh, they're not wealthy. There's huge inequality in terms of class. The class system in Sri Lanka is pretty bad, actually. Mm. But there is still stability. I'm going to say something that might sound really horrible, but it's tempting to be like, they know their place, you know, in Sri Lanka. The people in the lower classes are like, well, I'm going to farm this farm. And the upper classes are like, well, I'm going to rule. You know, and there's this kind of...
Because there isn't that social mobility, there isn't the kind of the grass is greener elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
In some ways, it's like, this is the lot that I've got. You know, family is obviously a big, important factor in lots of countries, but perhaps it's more of a factor there. Well, having said that, there are lots of big Italian cities on this, and usually having that stable family and stable home is quite a big thing in Italian culture too. So
that's true.
Yeah.
But their economy has been problematic for some time now, and a lot of Italians are moving to other countries to try to find work.
So Naples in particular is like, it's one of the poorer areas, right? Correct me if I'm wrong with any Italian viewers, but I'm pretty sure Naples has struggled with in the past, like the mafia and big inequalities. So that could be a factor as well. It could be potentially levels of crime, perceptions of what the government are doing in those countries as well, whether they're working for the people or working for themselves. So that injustice and inequality perhaps is a big play in some of those countries.
Yeah. I think you've just hit a nail on the head. I think perception is a key word there, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Ultimately, by the standards of your own nation and your own culture, that's how you measure your own happiness.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. It's interesting because in the World Happiness Report, the factors, they break it down into different factors. And the first one is dystopia and residual, which I'm still kind of trying to figure out exactly what that means. But then the other ones make sense, right? Perceptions of corruption is another one.
Yeah.
Perceptions of corruption, generosity, freedom to make life choices, healthy life expectancy, social support, and GDP per capita.
Yeah.
So, I mean, actually, dystopia and residual, that one that I'm not quite sure about, makes a quite a big chunk of the
total. It does, doesn't it? Yeah, looking at the graph.
So I might need to have a little more of a look into exactly what that means. But yeah, like, as you say, perceptions of corruption. Generosity, I mean, yeah. I mean, this, of course, is the World Happiness Report, which has Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Israel, Netherlands, near the top, right? But I thought that's interesting, because it ties into that for sure.
I think what might tie this all up is I found a report from 2010, sorry, a study from 2010 in Psychological Science, which did a study of 7,000 people from 28 different societies and then, you know, weighted the results to take into account any biases. And they found that happiness is highest when, in their words, when a person's personality matches the prevalent personalities of other people in a culture, culture functions as an important amplifier of the positive effect on self-esteem and subjective well-being at the individual level. So it's called the person-culture match hypothesis, proposed by this 2010 paper.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So basically, does your personality fit in with the society in which you live?
Interesting. That's an interesting thought. Me and my brother, I was speaking to my brother earlier, and he was saying about he loved going to Georgia. He went to Georgia recently.
Oh, wow.
He said, oh, it's beautiful, stunning. Like,
well, the place that Russia invaded.
Yeah. And he went to like some other places, including Tbilisi. And he was like, it was amazing, but culturally, something felt off to him in terms of like. It wasn't like a criticism of the people, but it was like, yeah, there's definitely a difference here in terms of where I feel that I fit versus the country's culture. And he gave some examples. Like, in general, people are pretty kind of blunt and rude.
Right.
culturally, right? It's just, and sometimes you have to kind of almost play a little game with them to open them up. And I asked, I said, why do you think this is? And he thought it was possibly because of the history of them being invaded so many times that they were just wary of others from the outside. So their culture was very much to stick to their customs, their norms, be friendly to the ones they know and perhaps sceptical of others. It's a bit of a tangent there. But ultimately, what you were saying about kind of fitting in and feeling like the culture reflects you as a person is a big point. My question for you then, Robin, is...
Yeah.
Do you think that your personality matches the culture of the UK?
I'm glad you asked me that because I was going to propose that maybe that's one of the reasons the UK is the second unhappiest place in the world by mental health, because I feel like it doesn't. And yet I know, in fact, I agree with pretty much all my friends. You know, you might dismiss it as just the echo chamber effect, but I know loads of people who share my values and have my opinion. And yet our society as a whole in Britain in the last few years, let's be honest, let's be specific, the last 14 years since a certain political party came into power, it seems like I'm divorced from my national values, and the things that our government is repeatedly doing are at odds with my own personal values and the society I want to live in. But what I find interesting is that at the same time, at the moment, we see politically this phenomenon of the hard right, the far right, is rising to prominence. And there's a lot of people, as indicated by the 2016 vote in favor of Brexit, who want something different from what I want, and they want it because they're not happy with the status quo. So what's interesting at the moment is, take Brexit as an example. Brexit has been so badly handled, however you voted in the 2016 referendum 8 years ago, it's been so badly handled that the people who wanted it aren't happy with the results because it's not what they wanted. because it's been badly handled. And the people who voted against it aren't happy because it's happened at all. You know, it doesn't matter what form Brexit took. Yep. People who are opposed to it are unhappy. But the but the form it has taken has dissatisfied the people who were in support of it. So I wonder if Britain, the UK, sorry, is unhappy from a mental health perspective, partly because our leaders have just driven us into a hole, you know, a cave with no exit, and ended up annoying everybody.
I mean, you mentioned and you said, oh, people might dismiss this as an echo chamber, but I think in terms of your perception about, you know, what your friends and your family and those around you believe about your nation and the future of it, and then what the reality is at like a macro level when people vote for, say, Brexit or a certain party, those things being divorced from one another, inevitably, because of some sort of echo chamber, whether that's on, you know, social media or the circles that you that you know are involved with, that's got to play a part, hasn't it? Of like you being, you know, being fed the your feedback loop is very much, yes, we want to support the most vulnerable in society, we want to build a society that's, you know, fairer for all or whatever your own political views are, and then the macro not reflecting that. There's that disconnect, isn't there? And that's surely, I mean, you can call it an echo chamber, but that's surely got to have a massive impact on the way that you feel about your nation and your own mental health.
I mean, I'd like to know if this mental health study had been done in the UK, say 5 years ago, before the pandemic, and when the full kind of economic downturn that we're experiencing hadn't kicked in, how different it would be. Because at the moment, like a lot of other places in the world, we have a cost of living crisis, we call it, where a lot of people, regardless of their level of wealth, are actually seeing their ability to afford to live shrinking massively. And of course, the poorest in society are the ones who are struggling to get by the most with the most difficulty. So I wonder if just a few years ago, if we wound back the clock a bit, the results of that study would be different, or if they would be the same because of other factors, more to do with social values than to do with the quality of your daily life, the perceived quality of your daily life.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, definitely when you look at Gen Z, I might be generalizing here, but from my perception, when you look at Gen Z, there's more apathy towards society as a whole. And I don't think that's unfair to say, you know, like you look at previous generations and they go, okay, well, you go to university, you know, you get a degree, you do that. You know, for starters, university for previous generations was free. And then those same generations, it was free for say, you know, take out a loan, it's going to be the cheapest loan that you'll ever get. that turns out to be absolute bullshit. And a lot of people are paying back hundreds of thousands of pounds when they took out a loan that's a fraction of that because of interest rates piled on top. And there's this sense of disillusionment with society as a whole. And perhaps it's, you know, I don't want to say bigger in the UK than in other countries, but it feels like it from our perspective. That there's a huge generation of people that go, okay, well, housing market's completely screwed, can never get a house. Student education is a scam. The job market is really, really impossible. And even if you get a top paying job in the UK, still you're going to struggle to afford like a
house,
reasonable size house in the country.
Yeah,
and it just seems like it's rigged against people. So
it's funny you should mention that, because I wonder, looking at that list again of the 10 unhappiest places to live, what I find particularly surprising is Australia, because from the UK's perspective, Australia is a place where everyone's really happy, and, you know, Australian expats who seem to get everywhere often want to return. And certainly there's loads of people dying to get into Australia who the Australian government does their best to keep out. So I find that very interesting that Australia is so low. Although, having just said that, it's several places higher than Britain. So maybe the statement that British people think Australia looks great still holds true, even if it's along with, you know, South Africa and Brazil and even Ireland, what you've just said, like, inequality comes to mind as a potential cause for that unhappiness. And in particular, those are countries which have fairly similar kind of economies and cultures built around the economy, in the sense that their version of capitalism has put more emphasis on the individual, like finding happiness. But that route to happiness at this point in time has been, as you just very nicely put, kind of dismantled or disrupted.
The phrase that comes to mind is, it's the hope that kills you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but Australia, I mean, again, Australia and New Zealand as well, their issues with the housing market replicate what we see here in the UK and perhaps are even more amplified, especially around the major cities. Like, as you say, there's the same issues. So not surprising to see some of those countries, especially in the younger generations. And that's interesting, like the younger generations, what you class as the aspirational generations,
yes,
is where we're seeing the biggest impact in terms of mental health rights in younger people.
Yeah,
there's various issues, I guess, around the rise in the rise in social media, but it's a big impact, right? People comparing themselves to one another, not having to live in community as well. You know, you can live your whole life if you want to remotely.
That's true.
I think it's a global issue, isn't it? More than just those
Thanks
countries.
Thanks to the internet and technology, amplified. You can spend all your time on your own, if you like.
Yeah. And so it's the superficial level of community and connection, but actually, in reality, it's not the same. Mm.
I wonder if there is a pincer effect then, if it's both those factors, especially looking at the 10 countries that are in the bottom list. If you set aside the ones which are actual war zones for a moment, and Uzbekistan, which is a miserable dictatorship that we spoke about recently, maybe it is that pincer effect of almost innocently, an older generation has handed a dream to the younger generation that turned out to not be true. And then they've had this complete lack of community support thanks to technology, where they've also found their way into echo chambers, where they've discovered that everyone else in their generation is just as unhappy. So all they have is this negative reinforcement of the unhappiness because they see everyone else being unhappy.
Yeah, that comparison. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I feel that way often looking at the US as well. I mean, the UK is second on this list, but looking at the US and the American dream in particular, it's great for it's almost survivor bias, isn't it? It's like, it's great for those who made it right to the top and they're like, thank God for the American dream. But for the people living in the gutter with no social security and no safety net for when things get rough, which inevitably they will for someone that comes to the US and starts with nothing, right? Yeah. Like, the chances you actually make it has got to be slim, right? Don't speak the language. The percentages add up to overall a less fulfilled, successful, and ultimately a less happy society. It's got to. It's only logical.
Yeah, you're right. I think, you've done it, Martin.
Oof.
You've done it. You've solved it. You've hit the nail on the
Completely,
head.
Completely, mate.
Tell us what you think, please. Mm. Comment below. And if you can't comment because you're listening to us on a podcast platform with no feedback mechanism, tell us on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, at JInterestingYT. What do you think? And do you live, or rather, whichever country you live in, go look at the World Happiness Report. Go look at this, what was it called, the mental health thing?
Global Mind Project's Mental State of the World.
Thank you. The Global Mind Project. Look that up. See where your country ranks and tell us whether you agree with that ranking, and if you don't agree with it, do you understand it the way that Martin and I just said? We kind of don't understand why, or don't agree necessarily with the UK being the second unhappiest place to live, but we kind of understand how it got there.
And also what I'd like to, I mean, the next step to this is there anything that can be done for
these
question. Countries? What would be the, what's the solution? What rectifies this? Is it a change in political system? Is it tearing down the walls, Mr. Gorbachev? like, what is it? What is a solution? Is there a solution? Or will we continue to spiral into unhappiness?
You know me, I'd tear the whole thing down and rebuild it. We can build it better.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a solution?
I think there's ways in which we can make it better.
Mm.
I mean, what the boomers would say is, you need to realign your aspirations with reality. perhaps part of it is that this generation will be less happy because of their expectations versus reality. But actually, when in a really horrible way, when the expectations of future generations are lowered,
yeah,
perhaps there won't be this disparity between what, you know, where we're at versus what we've been told.
I mean, I think you're right. I think the measures will reflect that. These rankings will change. Yeah, and once we've come to accept that, our generation, the generations around us, we'll pass that wisdom onto our children, who will grow up with low expectations and lower standards.
They'll be pessimistically content.
I mean, I think if I will be kind of specific, I would say that in the UK, certainly one thing that would help and make a big difference, I think, to people's perceived happiness is genuinely a competent government. Because right now, we literally have, on a daily basis, thousands of hours of sewage, raw, unprocessed sewage, being put into our waters. And we're an island. So if you put water into the, sewage into the coast, everybody gets affected. But it's also going into the rivers. So people are noticing it. And that's the kind of level of incompetence. And it's a lot worse. But that's a great example of why people might be unhappy. And you can fix that relatively simply. You know, a government can come in and say, stop doing that.
Yeah, just kind of like maybe a little bit of a drop in the overt corruption. They're literally corrupt politicians being corrupt, and then, you know, quite literally sticking their middle finger up at the public.
Yeah.
That did actually happen.
didn't it? Yeah.
It did actually happen. And having, no consequence. So I think it's the speed at the degradation of, like, the moral fabric of our society. But, like, it is, right? It's like the people at the very top are doing whatever they like, lining their pockets. Something that would have been outrageous and would have been called up on 20 years ago is completely just kind of ignored, and they're like, okay, yeah, great, we'll just grab a bit more cash here.
Yeah.
Or actually, who are the benefactors over here that we can have lining our pockets? We can give them 20 billion. Even if they give me $5,000, I'm up, you know? It's ridiculous, but it kind of feels like there's been a real moral decline.
There has,
That jump, that leap is very noticeable and fills people with pessimism. And and there's nothing we can do about it. People are like, oh, what do we do about this? Can we protest? No, no, they're actually cracking down on protests. Yeah. That's becoming illegal. And I don't know.
No, you're right. Like, you're completely right. We are living in a particularly acutely bad period in British history for our leaders being just awful. Like, the comic book villains, you know, just the level of, I mean, look at America when you want a comic book villain. It's just ridiculous how low we've sunk in the West, at least. And I think there are other countries with similar problems. We don't have rules. The corruption you're talking about is partly because these politicians are taking advantage of the fact that there's no hard and fast rules. There are no consequences for politicians being corrupt in the UK. It's a, what do they call it? Like the good boys club or whatever. It's just like, oh, he's an honourable gentleman, he won't ever do that. Just like, yeah, but maybe we should put the rules in place just in case somebody decides to do something despicable. And like, no, exactly. Can't possibly happen. And then it happens. Yeah. And it's like, oh, maybe we should write some rules about this. It's like, yeah, maybe you should.
In the UK, it doesn't help, like, I don't want to get too much into the weeds in politics, but we don't have it's an uncodified constitution, right? It's made up of, you know, all sorts. Go back to Magna Carta, was that 1215?
1215, yeah. Spot on. Yeah.
And a variety of other documents, probably locked up in a cabinet somewhere, gathering dust that no one's read for 300 years. You know, that's what makes up the the rules and regulations of those in power. So it's really a system not fit for purpose, which doesn't help.
It really is. I mean, some people, I find it funny how many people in Britain do disparage the US Constitution and say, oh, it causes more problems than it solves, and usually in reference to the Second Amendment. But I'm always in envy. I'm just like, no, it's really useful to have a written constitution. It's really helpful. You might disagree with some points in it, but that's what amendments are for. You can you can do this. So there you are, everyone. We've touched upon some possible solutions to the problems. At least we can speak to the UK. But yeah, tell us your thoughts. Do you agree with the happiness ranking of your country, the place where you live, your city even, if you're in Europe and you're on the list of cities that are really unhappy? And what kind of solutions do you think might exist, at least to adjust your position in the rankings? Game the system. How can we game this? How many points do we need to go up a place? Yeah, let us know your thoughts in the comments below. And Before we go, I'd like to know the answer to a riddle.
Indeed. So I'll say it one more time so you have it on the record. Okay. So the riddle is, the more you take, the more you leave behind. What am I? What are you thinking, Robin?
So after I went for coins and then I went for breath and then...
Every breath.
Stupidly, the third place my brain went to was jelly babies. And then I thought, I don't think that counts.
No, it doesn't make sense.
But then I thought, actually, could it be something humans do every day when they're moving about? Could it be steps?
It is. It is footsteps.
Footsteps, yeah. Yeah. Not the band, steps, but footsteps.
The more you take, the more you leave behind. Very good.
Very profound. Very clever.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Cool.
Well, thank you so much for that, Martin. That was a good riddle, especially because I got it. I was really fearful you'd pick one that I wouldn't be able to get. And when it's just me, I'm like, there's pressure. Loads of pressure.
The ideal is one that you think about for about 20, 30 seconds. You're like, yes. That's the ideal, right? Makes you feel a little bit smart. Challenges your brain once in a while. Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. That's what you need. And hopefully, Alex will return for our next episode.
Fingers crossed. He hasn't been battered by his teammates.
We shall find out. You know, hopscotch, famously deadly sport. Maybe he'll be back with limbs intact. Maybe he won't. We don't know.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out next week. Or not. Thank you for watching us, and thank you for all your support this time, especially to our wonderful Patreon and YouTube members. And we'll see you next time.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.